Chapter 5. The past 5 years had been leading up to one moment, and it hadn't arrived yet. I had been in Derby for 24 hours now, and I still hadn't been to a visit on my own. Another day had passed in going round with Farnan. It was a funny thing, but for a man who seemed careless, forgetful, and a few other things, Farnan was frustratingly cautious about launching his new assistant. We had been over into Lidderdale today, and I have met more of the clients. Friendly, polite farmers who received me pleasantly and wished me success. But working under Farnan's supervision was like being back at college with the professor's eye on me. I felt strongly that my professional career would not start until I, James Herriot, went out and attended a sick animal unaided and unobserved. However, the time couldn't be very far away now. Farnan had gone off to Broughton to see his mother again. A devoted son, I thought wonderingly. And he had said he would be back late, so the old lady must keep unusual hours. But never mind about that. What mattered was that I was in charge. I sat in an armchair with a frayed loose cover and looked out through the French windows at the shadows thrown by the evening sun across the shaggy lawn. I had the feeling that I would be doing a lot of this. I wondered idly what my first call would be. Probably an anticlimax after the years of waiting. Something like a coughing calf or a pig with constipation. And maybe that would be no bad thing, to start with something I could easily put right. I was in the middle of these comfortable musings when the telephone exploded out in the passage. The insistent clamour sounded abnormally loud in the empty house. I lifted the receiver. "Is that Mr. Farnan?" It was a deep voice with a harsh edge to it, not a local accent. Possibly a trace of the southwest. "No, I'm sorry, he's out. This is his assistant."
"When will he be back?"
Not till late, I'm afraid. Can I do anything for you?"
"I don't know whether you can do anything for me or not."
The voice took on a hectoring tone.
"I'm Mr. Soames, Lord Halton's farm manager. I have a valuable hunting horse with colic. Do you know anything about colic?"
I felt my hackles rising. I am a veterinary surgeon, so I think I should know something about it. There was a long pause and the voice barked again.
"In any case, I know the injection the horse wants. Bring some Arecoline with you. Mr. Farnan uses it. And for God's sake, don't be all night getting here. How long will you be?"
"I'm leaving now."
"Right."
I heard the receiver bang down onto its rest. My face felt hot as I walked away from the phone. So my first case wasn't going to be a formality. Colics were tricky things, and I had an aggressive know-all called Soames thrown in for good measure. On the 8-mile journey to the case, I reread from memory the great classic, Colton Weeks' Common Colics of the Horse. I had gone through it so often in my final year that I could recite stretches of it like poetry. The well-thumbed pages hovered in front of me, phantom-like as I drove. This would probably be a mild impaction or a bit of spasm. Might have had a change of food or too much witch grass. Yes, that would be it. Most colics were like that. A quick shot of Arecoline and maybe some chlorodine to relieve the discomfort and all would be well. My mind went back to the cases I had met while seeing practice. The horse standing quietly except that it occasionally eased a hind leg or looked round at its side. There was nothing to it, really. I was elaborating this happy picture when I arrived. I drove into a spotless, gravelled yard surrounded on three sides by substantial loose boxes. A man was standing there, a broad-shouldered, thick-set figure, very trim in check cap and jacket, well-cut breeches and shiny leggings. The car drew up about 30 yards away, and as I got out, the man slowly and deliberately turned his back on me. I walked across the yard, taking my time, waiting for the other to turn round, but he stood motionless, hands in pockets, looking in the other direction. I stopped a few feet away, but still the man did not turn. After a long time, and when I got tired of looking at the back, I spoke. "Mr. Soames?" At first, the man did not move. Then he turned very slowly. He had a thick, red neck, a ruddy face and small, fiery eyes. He made no answer but looked me over carefully from head to foot, taking in the worn raincoat, my youth, my air of inexperience. When he had completed his examination, he looked away again.
"Yes, I am Mr. Soames."
He stressed the Mr. as though it meant a lot to him.
"I am a very great friend of Mr. Farnan."
"My name is Harriet." Soames didn't appear to have heard.
"Yes, a clever man is Mr. Farnan. We are great friends."
"I understand you have a horse with colic." I wished my voice didn't sound so high and unsteady. Soames' gaze was still directed somewhere into the sky. He whistled a little tune softly to himself before replying.
"In there,"
he said, jerking his head in the direction of one of the boxes.
"One of his lordship's best hunters. In need of expert assistance, I think."
He put a bit of emphasis on the expert. I opened the door and went inside. And I stopped as though I had walked into a wall. It was a very large box, deeply bedded with peat moss.